Oh, it's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here. And it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
You know my work and you've given it a lot of thought, and I don't normally get such good questions, to be honest.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it sure was, especially the quiz. Thanks for preparing that for me.
Thank you for your wonderful questions.
Best when these things just turn into a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, you obviously got the book.
Good on you for fighting the good fight too.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you guys.
I love your enthusiasm. I just think it's a brilliant thing you're doing, a podcast about, you know, books, and you do a lot of great interviews, so I'm really honoured to be part of it.
I so enjoy listening to the podcast. I love it.
You're listening to Words and Nerds podcast with Danny V.
Today I welcome Gabrielle Tozer to the podcast, Australian author of young adult fiction, The Intern, Faking It, and Remind Me How This Ends, as well as picture book, Peas and Quiet. Today we talk about her beautiful children's book, Melody Trumpet, and we also have a review from a six-year-old. Enjoy!
Hi, I am 6 years old, and I'm going to tell you why I like the book of Melody Trumpet. I like the book of Melody Trumpet because she didn't know that she had a talent and she thought that she was capable of nothing. But at the end, her friends and her discovered that she actually did have a talent.
Welcome, Gab. It's so lovely to speak to you for a second time. And today we're going to chat about your new children's novel, Melody Trumpet.
Hi, it's so good to be chatting with you again as well.
I read this book to my six-year-old son and he just absolutely loved it.
That makes me so happy. And to be honest, it wasn't particularly had to be girl readers. There's some wonderful boy characters in the book as well.
Yep.
And I'm so happy that he loved it. That's great, because sometimes you're not sure with how, you know, covers are portrayed and even the title of the book. So that's made my day. Thank you.
No worries. I've actually tried really hard to read a variety of protagonists for both my kids and try not to get too caught up in whatever the cover looks like. So I don't know if I've had a little bit to do with it, but he just loved it. He loved it so much. So
oh, good.
He's going to do a bit of a review at the end of this interview.
Is he? I love that. Fingers crossed it's all okay.
I'm sure it is. Every night he's like, another chapter. I'm like, seriously, buddy, it's like 8 o'clock. We have to stop.
Aw, thanks, mate. Love it.
Now, you've got a number of young adult fiction novels as well, obviously. The Intern, Faking It, Remind Me How This Ends, which we talked about in episode 12, if people want to go back through the archives, as well as your picture book, Peas and Quiet, a contribution to Love Oz YA anthology, and now a children's novel in Melody Trumpet. What was the thinking behind this new kind of appealing to a new audience?
Now, don't judge me, but there wasn't necessarily thinking behind it. I'm someone who chases the ideas that speak to me the most, I suppose. And so I had the idea for what turned out to be Melody Trumpet, so this wacky middle grade novel, while I was actually in the editing process of Remind Me How This Ends, like one of my YA novels. So it was just an idea I couldn't shake. And so I wrote down everything I could remember about this idea that was just coming to me in a flash. And I didn't have time to work on it because I was already like so busy with Remind Me How This Ends. But I just knew that one day I would eventually get to it. So I wish I could say there was some amazing strategy on my part, but it was just an idea that I could not get out of my head. And so I just knew that I had to give it some time. Yeah.
But I love that because you just followed your creative brain, which kind of aligns to the novel, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's something that I've really made an effort with over the last couple of years, I suppose, to really throw myself at the idea that's calling to me the most, or, you know, bringing me the most joy, or that type of thing. Basically, the idea that I most passionately want to work on is probably the best way to put it, rather than trying to force myself to write something that I'm trying to guess is what people want or what the industry wants or that type of thing, which, you know, it's one of those areas when you're a creative writer, you cannot control how anything's going to be perceived. So I suppose for me, the one thing I can control is what I'm actually creating. So as long as I'm interested in it, then hopefully that'll actually help me get my butt to my desk and get some words down.
That's the important part, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it ended up being one of the most wonderful creative experiences of my career ever. So here's hoping I'm as diligent in following the ideas that call to me as well, like as time goes on, because yeah, it ended up being a really lovely one to write.
And it was really nice to read too. As an adult, you know, reading children's novels, it was just a real joy to read.
Oh, was it? Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's really nice to hear.
I really loved the novel, partly because of the importance of the creative mind through music and writing and so many other elements that the other characters portrayed. And I think it's so important for young people to explore the arts because it encourages empathy, creativity, problem solving, and can be a really cathartic experience. And I love how the book explores all types of art. Was that one of the ideas that was really strong for you when you were first writing the novel?
I suppose for me, it's something I've always naturally done. Like as a child, I studied music and did ballet and obviously loved reading and writing. And I think this idea came to me quite clearly, not obviously fully formed, but like semi-formed. And so I think as I was working on it more and more and some of the themes were coming to the surface a little bit, once you've worked out what you're actually accidentally saying, then you can finesse that. And I think that was one of the areas that I realized, wow, like there's some real celebration of all the varieties of ways that people can be creative in this book. And it was obviously just coming out of me by accident. And so I then made an effort to enhance that. And she meets these wonderful people throughout her journey who have like a huge range of creative interests. And I think for me, that was always part of the story. But once this particular thing clicked, I really took it as far as I could in making sure anyone who's reading this book, it's not a matter of you have to be writing to be creative. You know what I mean? Like it's like this is a book that celebrates whatever your passion might end up being. And so, yeah, that was something that it wasn't like I sit down and like come up with a message that I'm trying to send. It's more I write out this crazy idea and then look back and go, oh, I think I'm kind of half saying that. So let's really push that to the limit.
And I loved Dreamers Parade. I actually hope this place exists somewhere with these fabulously creative people.
Exists in my mind. Sorry.
Oh, excellent. If anyone knows of a Dreamers Parade, you've got to let us know something similar. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah.
But I loved how it was that sense of finding your tribe. And once you find that, you know, tribe that resonates with you and speaks to you, everything else makes sense. And I thought, how important is that for young people who, you know, don't always fit in or are feeling a bit awkward at times or don't feel like their interests align with other people? Like how great is that for young people?
Yeah, and it is something that can take time, finding your people. Some people are lucky enough to find them during primary school or during high school. Other people, it takes a little bit of time. And like, so that's something that it is one of those universal themes, I suppose. But in my times of going into schools and meeting students and just, you know, people in my own life, it is something that, man, it's just so obvious from a young age that the difference that having really good friends can make to your life. And it's and the same with family. Like there's a huge thing there about like it's you don't always get to in the book about you don't always get to choose your family, and so that's when friends become even more important. And so yeah, it was just something I had a lot of fun exploring, and it was one of the kind of more heartbreaking storylines because without giving too much away with the story, Melody is 10 years old and she's basically been locked away for the majority of her life. So she hasn't really had a chance to have that social life, meet friends and stuff. So until kind of things start changing for her, that was like a really sad place to be writing from because, yeah, it was really breaking my heart, those scenes where she's kind of watching from the like inside out, like seeing what everyone else is up to. So yeah. Yeah, it's it was really important to me, and I even like in the last couple of years, I've met some students who perhaps hadn't really necessarily bonded with people of their own age, like in their year group. Like this has been when I've gone into high schools, and what they have done, though, is they've clicked with people who have the same passions as them. So, for example, there was a particular school I went to last year, and quite a few of the kids who loved reading, they felt a little bit like outsiders in their own grade. However, they had started this library club, and so they would meet up every day. And this is kids from year 7 to 12, and I'm talking like 15 to 20 kids. And it was like every day they had somewhere to be, they had friends to hang out with, and it wasn't the most traditional kind of friendship group that you could imagine, but it was so beautiful and heartwarming to be around that they found each other in these like unlikely circumstances. I was just like so blown away. And like that didn't inspire me for the book because I'd already written the book, but it was just kind of reinforced this message to me, I suppose, about how you can find friendships in really unlikely places and how important that is.
I love that, because you don't necessarily find your friendship because you happen to be a particular age and live in a particular postcode. You know, that's always not going to necessarily align you with the people who are, you know, from your tribe, are they?
Absolutely. Like, and, you know, there's always friends of convenience and that type of thing. You don't necessarily even realise that's what it is.
Yeah.
Until perhaps you move a job or move suburbs and realize, oh, maybe we don't have that much in common after all. So I think there is something so, so special about those types of friends where you just click with in terms of what you're passionate about, because that can stand the test of time, you know. Like, it doesn't matter where you're living, you can still be so excited about this thing together. And I've got so many friends that are like that in terms of they're living overseas, or like so many of my close friends don't even live where I live. And so, yeah, it's one of those things. But what keeps it going is just that shared love of whatever it may be, whether it's writing or pop culture or that type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you still manage to explore really important issues in the novel, such as fame and accepting who you are. And these are really important issues, especially in our world. You know, we're saturated with fame. I mean, I read the other day that, you know, when I guess we were kids and they said, oh, what do you want to be? And you'd say a vet or a doctor or whatever. Mm. Now kids are just saying they want to be famous. Isn't that crazy?
It is, and that's something I was aware of before I was writing this book. Just to be transparent, it was something that was on top of my on the top of my mind. And so many kids that you meet, they genuinely want to, for their career, they would say they want to be like a YouTube star and that type of thing. And in a way, you can't blame them, because these kids that are famous on YouTube, their lives are, they're getting free stuff every day. They're getting paid to, you know, record stuff on YouTube. Like, it genuinely would seem like the dream to, you know, like, why wouldn't you want to be getting sent free stuff every day? Like,
they wouldn't want to play Minecraft all day.
Yeah, like, I can totally understand that. However, I think the thing that's important is to kind of just show the two sides to every story. So anyone who is famous is also coming up against a lot of negative things as well. And it's a matter of whether you can handle that side of it as well. So that was something I had a lot of fun playing around with in this book, through her parents, who are hilarious, which are villains. And so they have basically just taken their lifelong fame and run with it, and it's kind of twisted them into these awful individuals. But, yeah, not all fame is bad, obviously, but it can have some pretty crazy side effects for some people. So it was just kind of making sure that all sides of the fame thing are covered. And in terms of, you know, accepting who you are, this is another thing as well, that doesn't matter what age you are, like, there's adults still grappling with this concept, you know. But it is something that starts quite young, unfortunately, but it's something that I just really wanted to make sure anyone who was reading this book, it just, they recognize that was okay to be themselves, whatever their interest was. Because I think there can be shame around loving things or having hobbies that aren't deemed cool or popular, and it's so heartbreaking to hear people get shut down for what makes them tick. And I'd read Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic years ago when it first came out, I was in a bit of a creative slump. I was actually quite low mood-wise in my own life. I wasn't sure if I'd be able to write another book. And I read that book and it really spoke to me in the sense of just bring everything back to basics. You know, do you actually love writing? And I was like, well, yes. Make that the focus. And so she shared some heartbreaking anecdotes in there from people she'd met who had like a teacher or a parent or a friend shut down their effort at doing something creative when they were a child, and they literally like never picked up a pen or an instrument or a paintbrush ever again, and they were like in their 50s and it was something that they personally loved, and they just turned their back on it because of this one off the cuff comment, but it kind of cut them really deep. And that's something that I've even seen people in my own life go through. So I guess, you know, this is my little tiny attempt just to kind of be this little voice that's like, it's okay, just do it anyway. You know, it's okay to like do something just for the love of it as well. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not the best, you know, that's fine. If you love it, just do it. Like, I am not the world's best dancer, but I will dance any chance I can, you know? So it's just embracing that side of things.
I love that. I love that idea, because I think our society always wants an end point. You know, you have to study to get a job or a certificate or something. You have to do this for an end point. But it shouldn't be that way. If you just love to do something, well, just do it. You know, it doesn't matter how many people are listening or if you're winning races or whatever. If you love it, you should just do it. And I love that idea. I think we need to really come back to that.
Well, it's something for me, I'll be honest, I haven't always naturally felt that way. Like, I've always, through my own personality, just if I start to like something or if I'm having a go at something and I'm doing okay with it, then I must admit I do get to this point where I'm like, okay, well, what's next? You know, like, what's the next step? Should I try to do this? Should I try to do that? Like, for example, I was a dancer when I was younger and I quit in year 11 to concentrate on school and all that type of thing. And then as an adult in my early 20s, I rediscovered it when I moved to the city. They have these, you know, classes for adults. So I was like, this is amazing. And I fell back into that. And just gradually it kind of got busier and busier. And I was up to doing 4 classes again. In my mind, I was like, oh, I'm really loving this. Oh, maybe I could, you know, turn this into some teaching. And next minute, this thing that I loved and brought me more joy than just about anything was now becoming this pressure, this chore, and I was trying to work out how I could succeed and, like, climb, and I was just like, whoa. So I ended up having to, like, stop myself and realize not everything has to be about the climb. Mm-hmm. Some things are just for fun, and but that was the lesson I had to learn the hard way, because I basically burnt myself out physically, like, trying to, like, climb the ladder on something that I didn't even need to do, and it sucked out all the fun out of it. So it's something that's super important to me now. If I love something, I have to consciously say to myself,
calm down.
calm down, just enjoy this for what it is. Like, there doesn't need to be a goal set for this passion of yours. So, yeah, it sounds ridiculous.
No, I think everyone has that natural tendency to do that. Like, oh, you know, what next, what next, what next? And it's just calm down and just enjoy the moment. I think when you have children, you see them doing that. You know, you see them do all this beautiful experimental play, and it has no end point except just to be in the moment and have fun. So I think watching my own children, I've kind of learned that.
That's so wonderful, isn't it, to kind of get those little reminders about sometimes that's all it needs to be. In fact, a lot of the time that's all it needs to be, just enjoying it for the sake of it. And I've been trying to, since having my daughter as well, like my time is just, my time commitments have obviously changed a lot. Yeah, that's an understatement of the year. But I'm more focused on trying to just like fill my days and weeks and months with just as much fun, creative stuff as possible. And 95% of it like doesn't involve a goal. It's just me either consuming someone else's art or playing around with something that may or may not become a project. And you know, that'll change when I throw myself into writing another novel, obviously, but there's something to be said about just enjoying other people's creativity as well, and just playing around with your own. Like, you just never know what you're going to come up with.
Yeah, because we're so busy all the time, you know, everyone is so busy with their work or kids or whatever that you don't often find time to do that experimental stuff, that play, and I think we need to bring it back. I don't know how we're going to fit it in. Less sleep.
Well, that's the thing as well. It's like, you know, it's so easy to think, play, like I have time to do what's, you know, on my to-do list, let alone that. And I completely get that as well. Like, trying to, if you feel like you're being selfish or self-focused, if you're wanting to just, like, do that type of thing. So what I'm trying to do is, and I'm fumbling my way through it, but I'm almost just, like, dragging my baby along with me to things. Like, so I'll take her along to, like, an exhibition or that type of thing, just to try to make sure that I'm still keeping one teeny tiny little toe in the creative world. And, you know, it's nice to expose her to different things. The amazing thing with creativity, there's just so many outlets. Mm. And I think the thing to remember as well for everyone, myself included, is it's okay if your outlet changes over time. Like, I think in the past I was just so rigid about, you know, who I was and my identity as a writer and, you know, like putting pressure on things. And it's kind of like once you open yourself up to all the possibilities, you just never know what you might stumble across. And, yeah, that's something I've been having a lot of fun playing around with. And I think writing Melody Trumpet has kind of helped. I don't know if it's unlocked that in me, but I think it was a beautiful, like, reminder to me about how many other aspects of my personality there are to me, like, rather than just being a writer. Like, despite the fact that Melody loves writing as well, like, there's so much else in that book that in my life as a creative person has meant something to me, like the dancing, the love of, you know, watching other people perform, like, acrobatics, the music. Like, I studied piano when I studied music at high school, so it's just like a celebration of creativity. So, yeah, I'm really, really happy that that side of things spoke to you as well. That's very special.
And I speak to a lot of writers who also have been musicians in the past, or even those creative type of careers, like being a journalist or being a teacher, you have to be very creative. So it's funny that, you know, you're right, creativity, they bleed into each other because it's about creating something new from nothing. And I think, you know, it is the exploration of all different types of mediums, isn't it?
It is, and I think I meet so many people outside of my industries who are so quick to tell me that they're not creative at all. Mm. And it blows me away because it's just like how people use language to describe something, because they might not write a book or be able to paint something, but they can make the most beautiful meal from scratch, or they can, you know, create a piece of beautiful, like they can make a table, you know, like out of beautiful wood and that type of thing. And it's just like, that is so creative in its own way. Like, so I think that's the thing to remember as well. It's like literally everyone is creative. Mm. It's just how we kind of define it. So I wish I had others, like I wish I had more variety in my creative skill set, honestly.
But also finding it, you know, because as a kid you might do piano lessons or you might do dancing and they might not be the things.
And it's never too late either. No. Like I'm hoping that I still have some hidden skills that I can nurture. And even if I don't, like if I can kind of have some time to muck around with them a little bit, they might improve enough to kind of have a bit of fun with it. Like my mum recently took up watercolor painting again.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, like she's just having so much fun with that, and they're beautiful. And you know, she'd be quick to say, "Oh no, they're terrible," but you know, she's having fun with it. They look great, and it's just it's just never too late. And it's kind of like the beautiful Jonathan from Queer Eye, who is had the lifelong love of ice skating, and he is sharing his journey. He's in his 30s of finally just saying, that's it, I want to learn how to ice skate, so I'm going to ice skate every day and film it. And he's sharing that and being so vulnerable on Instagram. I find that really, really inspiring because it's such a growth mindset in terms of he's all about the journey.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Which, yeah, is very inspiring because I used to be very much about the fixed mindset of, oh, well, if I can't do it perfectly the first time, then it's obviously not meant to be, and blah, 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 you know. So, yeah.
And in the past, I think age has always been a barrier, like, oh, you're 30 or 40, it's too late to embark on anything new. But I think we do have that new growth mindset, and we do have the mindset of it doesn't matter how old you are, just go and do it.
Absolutely. And, yeah, there's kind of two types of people in the world, isn't there? There's a type who will who will tell themselves that story and say to themselves, well, you know, it's too late for me, I've missed my chance to play with this. And then there's those amazing people you meet in 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, who it's never too late, and they've always got a new passion that they're playing around with. And one of my gorgeous friends, her mother, who has also become a friend, Tootie Bennett, she's fabulous, and she's the first person to say her catchphrase is, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And she is just fabulous, and her life has taken her in all sorts of directions, and it's only literally in the last couple of years that it's really accelerated in like certain areas that are really celebrating who she truly is. She's very flamboyant and beautiful with fashion, and that's since taken her overseas, and she's been a model in a Sephora campaign overseas.
Wow.
And she's been photographed, it's been shared on Oprah, and like she's in her, I can't remember if it's late 60s or early 70s. It is so never too late, but it comes down to her attitude, because for her, age isn't a barrier. So I think that's the key. Like, you've got to be open enough to be open to life still, you know? Mm, so she is who I want to be, basically. Like, she keeps telling me, I want to be you. And I'm like, I want to be you. So, yeah, she's amazing.
Now, these parents were, I loved to hate them and I hated to love them. It was this weird relationship I had with them. They were an absolute piece of work, but they were so funny at times because they were horrible, and it was just this really great social commentary running through it about fame versus reality and public perception versus the private world, and you know, our world becoming so obsessed with fame. How did you come up with those two?
Those two came to me almost fully formed, just in my mind. I don't really know. They just were so real in my brain, and down to even their voices. It was this book was really special in that way. A lot of it kind of just was obviously ticking away in the back of my mind, and then when I had a weak moment, it all just started kind of firing at me. And those two were probably one of the stronger elements that kind of started coming at me thick and fast. And they're obviously very over the top, very ridiculous. And I knew that they were the villains of the story, but I wanted them to still have these moments where the reader is kind of laughing because they're so ridiculous. Like, the husband is Mr. Barry T. Trumpet. He's hopeless. And as my edits went on and on, I kind of was making him sillier and sillier in terms of some of his more stupid moments. And Viola, the mother, became slightly harder and harder. Yeah, I think I fine-tuned who they were on the edits, but in terms of how I came up with them, I don't know, I think they were just lurking in my brain ready to be written. But, yeah, I've always enjoyed a really kind of over-the-top villain in a children's novel or movie, so I think this was my time to play around with writing that, because I haven't, like in my other books, obviously, YA is really different, and especially because I write contemporary, it's so grounded in real life. Mm-hmm. And then in my picture book, it's not really like a villain, it's more the two little peas are against each other. So with this one, this is my first chance to write like proper antagonists. But I didn't want it to be an antagonist that is just all full-blown evil. You know, yeah. Like that wasn't for this particular story. I thought I wanted that comedy element woven through, because those are the types of books that I enjoyed when I was growing up, when I was younger, where there's a lot of comedy, a lot of heart as well, but the comedy kind of saves it from sinking too far into you know, too heavy. So
yeah, yeah. It was interesting because they were horrible, but it wasn't dark at all. You know, it wasn't at any point where I thought, oh, this is getting really dark for a child. They remained villains, but it kept that lightness through the comedy. They're almost kind of these wonderful caricatures of, you know, famous people who have just lost their humanity, but it was really well done. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yeah, like I was very much pushing myself with those two to just be like, push it further, make them crazier, make them more ridiculous, make their requests and their, you know, idea of themselves just more and more ridiculous. Like, if I think I've gone far enough, just push it just that little bit more. So that's fair enough to say about the caricatures, because I was almost, like, doing that deliberately, because I wanted this book to not be quite real, but not be quite crazy. Like, it was almost like dancing just with the ridiculous here and there.
Yeah, so, yeah, which I love. Yeah. They almost reminded me, like, of the characters from Hunger Games from the Capital.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I imagine them with really coiffed hair and, you know, really colourful clothes and these kind of pretend people.
Absolutely, that's a very fair portrayal, a very fair comparison.
And, of course, Clementine and Freddy, they were just such wonderfully vivid characters and were a great juxtaposition to the parents. Is that how they were developed?
Freddy and Clementine were developed a little bit more slowly throughout the process. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make sure I was creating a little team for Melody that would challenge her and work well with her. Like, these are her first friends that she's ever had. So they had to be really special. But I didn't want it to be, and then she just met two little girls the same age. And I just wanted it to be kind of slightly different. And I, the thing that I loved about Clementine was it was just such a out there friendship. And it was almost like Clementine's like this older sister. And I liked this element of having like a slightly older female friend who's almost like a bit of a mentor, bit of a sister. So you're kind of getting, you know, challenged by them a little bit. And yeah, good old Freddie. He was someone who I just loved his little voice in my head from the start. He was just so cheeky and sweet. But the thing I loved about him was, again, like Melody, people from a distance think that they've got it all together, but that she obviously didn't. And the same with him. Like, she thought he had it all together and had everything perfect, but really he also felt like an outsider at this music school because his family weren't well off and he was scraping by on a scholarship. So he also felt like an outsider. And I think that's the one thing that brought those three together. Three different worlds, completely different worlds, different classes, yet they all feel a little bit out of place. And so that's what connected them.
It's interesting, that perception, isn't it? And I think that is true in real life. We think that everyone has it together, but, you know, behind the Instagram pages, there's that reality that we sometimes all feel like we're a bit outcast.
Yeah, I think so many people do. So, yeah, that was something that kind of over time became more and more important to me just to share. It's just like a gentle reminder. It's like, let's just go easy on each other a little bit. Everyone's struggling yeah, with something.
Absolutely.
It may not be parents trying to kidnap you and send you overseas, but, you know, everyone's got something.
Everyone's got their something, that's right. And what's the writing process? How did that differ for you from young adult to writing a children's novel?
So there's a few things that were pretty different with writing Melody Trumpet. The first big change was this book isn't filled with the classic young adult angst. So I was in a bit of a different headspace while writing it. I was more focused and I'd learnt some really amazing lessons, I suppose, from working on Remind Me How This Ends. So I kind of was a little bit more organised with how I was structuring the book. Mm-hmm. So I, like, came into Melody Trumpet. I planned that whole book. I had it, like, very organised. So I am definitely a complete planner now. So as my novels have gone on over the years, I've become more and more of a planner with my stories, and that has really helped get the most out of them, I think. So that's a huge difference. Another big difference was my work circumstances were different yet again. So I was didn't really have like set times when I knew I'd be able to work on it. So I was having to be more flexible. Some weeks I would have time to write on it every morning. Other weeks I might only get a day. Then I went on a writing retreat with my husband at one point and we went to the Blue Mountains and he was playing around with the story and I was working on Melody Trumpet. So I, you know, did like 14,000 words in one weekend. And then, yeah, it was just chopping and changing and just kind of being okay with that. But it wasn't stressing me out because I had this ready-made plan. So whenever I realized I had time to work on it, I could go to my plan and go, okay, well, here are the scenes that I still have to write. Which one do I feel up for writing? As opposed to, oh my God, I don't know what I need to write, and just staring at a blank page. So breaking novels down into scenes, into chapters, really seems to be working for me at the moment because I can kind of dip in and out of them. They're probably the biggest changes. Oh, then the final biggest change was I fell pregnant. And so, and that was a game changer in a way that I could not have comprehended because I was so sick. Oh my goodness. So then it kind of had to change yet again. And I couldn't even like sit down or concentrate for 5-10 minutes. So then, you know, I had periods where I couldn't even really work on it. So it was a matter of when I was feeling well, I had to go. it was every book ends up being such a different experience, and it's why it doesn't get easier to be an author, because you think, oh, it'll just get easier as time goes on, but there's always some new challenge that's waiting to keep you on your toes. So my new challenge for writing a book these days is, how do I make time for this around a little tiny human who just wants to hang off me 24/7? So that will be my new thing that I'll need to work out.
And that's being creative too, trying to find those pockets of time.
Oh, absolutely. I've heard it described as the fringe hours. It's
I like that.
Yeah, what fringe hours do you kind of have in your life that you're not using properly? Like maybe you're spending that 30 minutes or 40 minutes here or there just like scrolling on social media or just laying in bed trying to sleep but you can't or whatever it is. So I think I need to get smart about it. About work out. Yeah, well, my future me will spend some time thinking about how to do that.
Now, look, I know Melody Trumpet has just come out, so I don't want to put any pressure on you, but is there some ideas that are bubbling? Is there something that's next?
Yes, I do have an idea that I'm super passionate about, which is back to being a young adult novel, which I often remind me how this ends, which I'm so proud of and still just means so much to me. It really wrung me dry emotionally, and I was literally thinking, oh, my gosh, I don't know if I've got anything left in me to write in this age group, you know. And then after having a child, I was like, oh my God, I can't imagine diving back into writing for this age group. And there's this idea though that I'd had before I fell pregnant, and I loved it. And now that my daughter's 13 months old, I'm feeling more like me again. I'm kind of back into the swing of doing some writing here and there, and that idea still won't let up. And so it keeps coming to me, and I keep kind of tweaking things here and there. Like, I'm still very much just in the brainstorming and planning stages, but the fact that it keeps knocking on the door makes me think that there is something to it. So I'm kind of having a bit of fun playing around with it in terms of planning out what it might look like. So fingers crossed, because I think it's got legs. So that's something that I'd love to do. But I also have some other wacky middle grade ideas that I think could be really fun. So, this year is about playing and hopefully carving out some time to write something new to keep, to throw myself back into that world, because I certainly am a happier person when I've got like a project to be putting all my crazy thoughts into. Otherwise, they just stay in my brain and I end up driving myself mad and driving everyone around me mad. So I think I need somewhere for these ideas to go.
Oh, it sounds wonderful, and we can't wait for more, because I absolutely loved Melody Trumpet and I loved your young adult fiction as well. But it was so nice to be able to share this book with one of my own children who absolutely loved it. So thank you so much, and I can't wait for more of this kind of genre. And it's so lovely to chat to you as always, Gab. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Danny. It's been amazing to chat with you as well.